Welcome to Collector's Corner, the premier digital art platform.
We help collectors gain and maintain their edge, all while appreciating beautiful art.
Let's jump in.
Okay, welcome everybody to the 64th Collector's Corner, Cornering the Market, our weekly, usually weekly art recap. We're doing these now live on Twitter Spaces, but we also have this on YouTube. So I'll be showing stuff on the video here later. Unfortunately, we're not prominent enough to get those live streams on Twitter yet, but soon, Jared, someday soon. So just a little bit of housekeeping. Please give us a follow at collectors_XYZ. Also check out our Substack. We do these weekly updates by Substack as well. Mine, I go by Aston Cloud online here. You can see my handle at Aston Cloud. Give me a follow. It's really helpful. Much appreciated. Joined by my co-host at Jared_Paws, who's also the founder of the 8NAP Art Digital Asset Fund and Art Platform, which has a release coming up on the 23rd. It's actually on the docket, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. And we're joined by a fantastic artist guest, Black, who has a upcoming release on Foundation on the just next week. And I'm blanking on it, Black, if it's the 17th or the 18th, but it is coming up and it's gonna be a base release. So pretty excited to hear more about that. So we're gonna go through our main show, then we'll throw it over to Black around the 30 minute mark, talk about his upcoming release, Alpha versus Omega, and then we'll also have audience come up and ask questions and chat about whatever, whether it's the show itself or if you want to talk about Black's work. But he is at BLAC_AI. That's shown on the screen here. Last but not least, I wanted to shout out quickly my premium subscription service, of which Black is a member. And, you know, it kind of started out as people primarily as investors, but it's evolved to anybody just really interested in the art space. We have some fantastic artists in there. We have builders in there, platform builders like Jared and folk Jamie Gorley from Verse, etc. And a growing and great cadre of artists. So if you're interested in that, shoot me a DM. That's a monthly membership, but I am giving out some free time for folks who are interested, 2 weeks to a month, depending. So all that out of the way, let's jump right into the market recap. We were out last week due to NFT NYC, but really the most prominent trend that I am seeing here is that Xcopy has been on a tear. Shown on screen here is a tweet from Damon.eth. Well, actually, he retweeted somebody who is ape6743, who said, looking at some quick math, it's been over 1,900 ETH in US dollars, roughly 6 million US dollars in volume for Xcopy Works in the past 7 days. That was on April 10th, so just a couple days ago. That's quite a bit. And it's not just the high end of his one of ones. We've seen, well, also some expensive editions, but Grifters, which is lower end-ish, as long as some open editions that he's had. So Xcopy is on a tear. Jared, I'm curious to hear your thoughts as to what might be driving this, if you have any insight into that, and also what this might mean for the broader market. You know, does it mean art is not dead? Does it mean Xcopy is just an exception and the rest of art is dead? You know, I've been hearing various different explanations, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
My perspective on it is, I think that, you know, all of us that aren't spending 45, 50, you know, 200 ETH for some Xcopy editions and one of ones are waiting for, you know, our bags, you know, when do our bags go up? I think that this is an early indication of people collecting what I would call historic art and people with a little bit more disposable income being able to start collecting that. I mean, sentiment is low overall, I think. You know, we've been talking about it for months and months now. But just generally speaking, I think this is good. What I'd like to see, you know, some of these are buyers, you know, whether it's an autoglyph set, some of the Xcopy, or even the one of the aliens, the alien punks, are traditional collectors. I'd like to see more of a broader mass appeal to to the collecting, honestly. But overall, I think that this is positive. I mean, you saw not only some of these big massive X copy sales. I think, you know, I was tracking, you know, we were talking about in Collector's Corner. I was tracking one of the Max Payne collection. That's up 40-50%. So, you know, it's trickling down everywhere. The flies are up, you know, 3X from the mint. So I think it's just general overall hysteria. And one of the things I like about X copy in particular is he has entry points at every single level. Again, all the way down to dollars. Literally single digit dollars for these flies. So overall, I think it's positive. I wait for the broader enthusiasm to expand beyond X-Copy and really start having a focus on overall art sentiment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to some extent, you know, we are in a bubble. Most of the people that at least I interact with have, for lack of a better term, baggage from the bear market. And really more recently, it's not even the bear market, but relatively speaking, things that could have made more money, and let's call it FOMO. But it seems like a lot of these buyers who are coming in don't have that baggage. And I am curious to see if and when folks who have been keeping up with the space feel like the sentiment is shifting for art. Because you know, the conversations that I've had are kind of like, well, art feels like it's dead. It's like, okay, well, X copy is moving. What do you think of that? Well, it's just X copy. So it's sort of like, you know, just I think time going on and things not going up in price, people, it weighs on them when they look at it over and over again. But, you know, I've been saying this for a few months and I continue to be encouraged by the highest end of NFT art doing well. And as we've talked about, I think the high end tends to move first. One collection that has been still maintaining and just seeing really impressive both volume and buying behavior is a line draw. And that one, it was just notable amongst all the various collections that I track in that it did have a sale or a bunch of pieces were floored. It seems like folks who maybe were not longtime art collectors based on what was in their wallets. And that dip just got gobbled up very, very quickly. It only got as low as like 0.8 ETH, I believe, and got bought up pretty fast to now back over 1.1. And it does seem like AI art as a whole has held up reasonably well, though we are seeing some dips in the older gen art. Let's call it Squiggles, for example, now are back down to below 5 ETH, 4.5 ETH roughly. Those are kind of my main takeaways there. Not a ton this week in the art market. In fact, I would say pretty low volume across the board. Most things are kind of holding, maybe seeing a little bit of dip in that, call it high-end generative art. AI art seems to be holding up better. And, you know, by the way, anyone who's listening, I know we're talking about prices, but this is essentially a proxy for sentiment and interest at the moment. But what are you seeing, Jared? Any other observations from the broader art market?
I think that if somebody, you know, if you're astute enough, you can see a couple OTC transactions. And again, I think that those who, I think Cosimo or somebody, you know, tweeted about it. Like if you're really astute and you're looking, I think that there's stuff moving hands, which is really encouraging to see. I think over, I mean, I'm just going over NFTPriceFloor.com that we use. And I mean, anything that's in the green is really X right now. It's just kind of the meta of the day. But I still stand by the fact that if you hold a long enough timeline, you know, there's some really, really great opportunities to buy great art early on. So I'm still uber bullish. I mean, I'm looking at Winds of Yawanawa just slightly below 4 ETH. A really great entry point there, in my opinion. You know, Gazers are coming back to being accessible to a lot of people. And I mean, one of the premium members the other day picked up a really great low color spread squiggle for 5 point something. So, and dude, there's an autoglyph for 145. You know, I mean, that's a big amount. That's 500 grand, even in today's, you know, sell off market of ETH value. And I mean, I don't know if this is public, but like I was just offered a Lost Robbie. Like there's high end art is moving and it's encouraging to see. I really think that there's, you know, even I think I use this as a data point. Raoul Paul, founder of like Real Vision, really amazing macro mind. You know, he was stomping the ground to the collective about Solana between $8 and $10 and the adoption, and then he just voted with his Ethereum and bought a bunch of Xcopy, right? So I think he's rotating into it. You know, I think he's got a thesis that everything bubbles up to art. I mean, in one of the interviews I listened to, he says art is the pinnacle of crypto wealth. So I think we're there. I think we're just conditioned in this time to have, you know, a shorter term mindset versus maybe something like art that accumulates value over a longer timeline.
Very well said. Very well said. You are right. I didn't have in my notes that Autoglyph sale. I had forgotten about that. In addition to that, we saw a couple other really high sales. We saw a zombie CryptoPunk sell for slightly over $1 million. It was 320 ETH. And just today, we saw an Xcopy 1 of 1 sell to Moderats, a big collector, for 255 ETH, just shy of $900,000. So continuing to see some really big sales there. Another sale that I think is worth hitting on is Botto's most recent 1 of 1 sold for 11 ETH. Now, there's another one that's on auction. I think it's ending soon. So we'll see what... Perhaps it already ended. We can look at it live. This one, a little bit less, 5.5 ETH. But, you know, it's still quite a bit. And the Botto is consistently making sales in the higher end. A lot of the previous ones were above 10 Ether. So again, continuing to see pockets of interest, and I don't think it means that everything is down and never going to come back. I think some things are, and some are moving, and we'll see what happens as things open up. The one other news story I wanted to hit on here, Jared, is Xcopy also announced, well, he didn't really even announce this, but there's been a movement in Xcopy's Doom token. And the token, I had the date wrong here in this tweet. This tweet was actually from October of 2019. But that token has really started to move. And there's this idea that some are from Xcopy, you'll only be able to buy it through his token. So he's had this token around for a long time. In addition to that, there's the Xcopy Open Edition, which is almost functionally a token on Base that people are redeeming for a meme coin called Flies. I haven't super close attention to that, but do you think that Xcopy experimenting this way will open up the path for other artists to consider other, let's call it Web3 native ways of community building? That's the category I put under. Or do you feel like it's too early to say? And it's one of those things that Xcopy can pull off, but other people probably need to be more cautious.
I think for me, I hope that that's the case, right? Like that's the end state. I mean, that's the beauty of the blockchain and being able to, you know, be inclusive. I'm really, really bullish on like what this could mean for the space and just even the broader public. I mean, I think it really opens up a lot of doors for adoption. I mean, I love seeing 1 million mints of Xcopy's Flies on Base because, I think Base is kind of, I mean, I was low key talking to somebody about this, but I think it's going to be one of those unlocks to onboard a lot more people just because I think they have something like 120 million wallets. You know, I don't know how many of those are active at this moment, but I gotta imagine once you hit this like crazy speculative moment, it's going to be a seamless integration with Base, and that it has me more bullish on the space than ever because the amount of friction has been greatly reduced in my opinion, and that's allowing for more people to get a taste of it. Now, how many stay around? I don't know. But the reality is similar to like you and I, you come for one reason and you stay for the art. My firm belief is that a portion of those will stay for the art, and that overall expands the ecosystem, and that's good for everybody involved. But coming back to your question, I think with X, I, you know, the tokenization, and I mean, he's shown us kind of like a little bit of an insight with like Max Payne, right? Burn this, get that. He's reducing supply in very creative ways. Like, I think as an individual, he's very thoughtful about community and really innovative, along with a few others that come to mind, you know, like Def Beef and even Sam Spratt to some degree, or Jack Butcher. Like, they're really innovating about this engagement, and it's all centered around art, which has me super, super excited.
Really great thoughts. And I tend to agree with you on base, just the way it's trending. And really intrigued to see how this goes and continue to see what happens as more Web3 plays are unlocked, and seeing how many of those artists and other creators are able to pick up and successfully utilize.
But I think we have like a game plan. It's not analogous, but like you saw like the mania around Doge, right? Like, or even meme coins now to this degree, like you get this herd mentality and people rush in. I think that we're on the cusp of excitement, and I hope that X and some of these others are the vehicles in which to bring that onslaught of attention to art.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that would be fantastic. Not just because we love art, but it would bring some more culture and not pure gambling into the space, which I think a lot of probably expand the space in general. Speaking of art, without thinking about gambling, let's shift over to great art at great prices. And I want to tee this first one up, Jared. I know you can talk to as well, but this is by our friend Delta Sauce, who is in the crowd as well. And this is Views by Delta Sauce, just sneaking in below $500 at the floor price. 0.148. Just love this collection, and it's one of my favorite AI art collections because, well, one, the nostalgia he's able to bring in these scenes is awesome, but also just the variety while continuing to have different themes that one can follow. Really, really hard to do. Individually made pieces, 500 of them, Braindrops release, and unfortunately, one of his big collectors was recently hacked, which may be why the floor price is below our $500 limit, but at least some silver lining gave me the ability to put it into this segment here. So awesome. Check out Views by Delta Sauce. And I'm going to throw it over to you, Jared, to talk about Smile, the other great art at great prices we have today.
Well, I will say I'm an absolute fanboy of Views. The king of nostalgia, Delta Sauce. It's so well executed, such a great collection. And like you said, unfortunately, one of the collectors got it. Not that I need flowers or anything, but I was able to return one of the pieces. Actually, my favorite piece from the collection I found on the floor last night. As much as I wanted to hold on to it, I sent it back to VR because it was the rightful home for him. And I'm just happy to see the community rallying around it. It's sad to see, but it's a moment to say, again, everybody, trust the links. Do stuff on your own terms. Create your own links. Trust but verify. I mean, good things or bad things happen to good people, unfortunately. So just be diligent. And as we're going into this, like, hopefully bull market, just be even more diligent, because this is going to get crazy, in my opinion. So anyways, little service announcement, I guess, over going into Smiles. Smiles is a AI project by Rope Renisto, and it, as the title implies, focuses in on smiles. And it's in the interest or the typical vein of Rope's work with having the post photography AI, you have this like photo surrealism that ranges, in my opinion, from like really creepy smiles all the way to unique. Personally, full disclosure, in my personal collection, I've collected a good number of these that I thought, and I just, the more I look at these, for 0.4 soul, even with soul tanking today, you know, for less than $75, there's a really great opportunity here to get some great art by Rope. And it's really fun. This one like really lends itself to collecting around sets, something that I've been like extremely fascinated and like really obsessed with lately. And overall, I mean, again, $75. I don't know if you'll find a better project and Rope's work is always just like super polarizing, especially when I think not financial advice, but you know, Lee was on the verge of a massive run here. It's really great to get some Rope exposure.
Absolutely. And this is one of the most unique collections I've seen, 5,000 pieces, like you said, hard to replicate 5,000 pieces in something that is universally identifiable and crazy low price, 0.4 Solana at the moment, or it looks like even 0.32. So check that out. Let's talk about some upcoming releases. I'll do a quick one first, Jared, one that I wanted to put on people's radar. Grant Yoon is doing his first Solana drop. It's next Thursday, April 18th on exchange.art. It's an edition of 250. So for the Grant Yoon fans, check that out. Also excited to see how the Solana community kind of welcomes Grant as this is his first release. And the next one that I'll tee up for you, Jared, is your release with 8NAP Art coming up quick. April 23rd, this is with Rich Poole and Rick Crane. It is called ISO Metro. It is in their classic, we just did a podcast with them. They are one of the most prolific, if not the most prolific, generative art / digital art duos. This is their third piece. They keep evolving their style, which is this classic minimalist style that is illustrated in nature, but then remixed with generative art, fully code-based, fully on-chain, and the first 8NAP Art release. So I'm going to do the shilling for you, but any words you want to mention about this one, Jared, give you a chance to let everybody know more about it.
I'll say be on the lookout next week. I have some raffles going for allow lists. The way this will go down, I'm going to have a tweet about this here pretty soon too. Some may know there's pass holders for 8NAP Art. They're going to get the first series of mints, so that's 100 pieces. And then there will be an allow list period. So we're looking somewhere in the 400-piece collection size. About 200 of those will go to the allow list, with 75 being up for public consumption. So if you have some interest in it, be on the lookout for the communities that we've partnered with. You'll see some pre-mints and different raffle options to get in there. Rick and Rich have posted about this. If you're collectors of theirs, send over your ETH address to them. If you're a collector of 3 Acequias or more, send it your ETH address my way. We're going to put you on the list, and we have some allocations for that. But just overall, man, super, super humbled by, you know, what they said in the podcast yesterday, and excited to share this with the generative art space and the art space overall. Starting to see a little bit of the stuff leak out. Look out for the podcast release that Astem's going to do on Collector's Corner. It was a little bit different to be on the other side of the interview microphone, but it was awesome. And there's a couple previews that got flashed up on screen there at the end. So just super excited. It's such a engaging project. And, you know, one of the things that we're hoping people start to resonate with is it's done. You know, Acequia was done in a portrait format. This is done in a square. And the context of this is, or the subject is very urban, you know, city feel. So we're hoping that people will start to collect in grids and post them on the walls in grid fashion. So it looks like I think there's just so much potential to have like this urban layout. You know, it's native to urban layouts to have the grid. So I'm excited to see how this resonates with collectors and to see the grids that start to show up on the wall. And just, I couldn't be more happy with the first release. So be on the lookout, more to come. Super dope. If you do want an allow list spot, it will be less expensive than the public mint. So feel free to reach out to us and see what we can do and put your notifications on. We'll start posting these.
Awesome. Well, can't wait to hear more. Again, that is April 23rd. Now we'll just hit some art to highlight. I'm going to boogie through this so we can get over to black. The first one is Random Access Memories. This is a collab between Atelier and Rafa_NYC. This is on Tezos, 8 Tezos for the mint here. It is open. There are 69 of these left for the culture, I suppose. People left that many. But these are really cool. It's really interesting art. It's supposed to signify kind of memories and words coming into your mind from memories. And I think the art does a good job of signifying that. So check that out. The second one I wanted to shout out, it's kind of crazy to me that this isn't really minting out, but it's called Blue Hour Adventures by Kath Simard, who is a landscape photography artist. And I would say one of the top photography artists, period, in the space, and certainly the top landscape one. And it's kind of a cool story. It's about her sort of reconnecting to where she kind of really dove into nature in Australia, going on a long hike, multi-day hike, solo, taking this beautiful picture there. And the experience kind of inspired her to create a children's book along with it. And it is only 0.155 ETH that gets you, the total supply is 444. And it gets you both the physical print, the book physically, and an NFT of the image and the NFT of the book cover. So check that out. I wanted to shout that one out as well. And with that out of the way, let's talk about Black's upcoming release, Alpha versus Omega. And here it is. It's coming out on April 17th. My apologies for having some confusion on the date there, Black. But really interested in Alpha and Omega versus Omega, excuse me. And maybe you could just quickly tell us some of the logistics first. You know, how many pieces is it going to be? And we know it's releasing on Foundation. Is it fixed price? Is it an auction? Like, where can people find it, and what can they expect there?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you giving me the floor to chat about it. It's going to be on Foundation, as you said. I'm actually going to have a featured exhibition on there, like a solo kind of drop page, and with a lot of, you know, info and sort of narrative stuff about it and that sort of thing. It's nine total works. Two of them are going to be open editions, and the other seven are one-to-ones. So the open editions are going to be 0.03 each. It is going to be on base again. And the one-to-ones, the seven one-to-ones, are going to have a 0.1 reserve. So
awesome. And those open editions, how long will they be open for?
That's a good question. It's not set in stone. I think probably 5 days. Maybe seven. We did 7 days for the MAVE show for New York. I think that worked out well. I think one thing is, like, a lot of people's time is split between here and the new Purple app. And there's also just, I just feel like the 24-hour cycle is really fast, and I just want to make sure that there's time for people to get it. But I also feel like 7 days is really long. So that'll be a decision I probably make at the last minute, but most likely, you know, 5 or 7 days.
Got it. Yeah, I agree. 24 hours is tough, especially in this space when, you know, people are busy and it's hard to keep track with everything else. But amazing. So let's talk a little bit about the work. And actually, really quickly, is there somewhere folks can see previews, or is your Twitter the best place?
Yeah, my Twitter is the best place for the moment. I am going to have like a drop page set up on Foundation. I have it sort of in draft mode at the moment, but I can pin up a tweet just to kind of have a little bit of eye candy, you know, on there. But
okay, yeah, perfect. And there you go, wonderful. And now let's talk about the art itself. I mean, you have a broader, I don't know what to call it. Folks who don't know, Black has been building for years a philosophy that is also backed by his art, including lore, and it's super complicated that I cannot do it justice. So I wanted to ask you, first and foremost, how did you kind of come up with the theme around Alpha versus Omega here? And I know you sent me some info, but I'd love for you to share it. You know, there's a lot of duality and tension that you try to explore. And then secondly, does this fit into your broader body of work that you've been, you know, working on for a long time?
Yeah. So, you know, the genealogy of this is interesting because it sort of spawned out of some conversations with different people. And I think, you know, a collection that I put out last fall called Hands of the Faithful, which actually some holders of that are in this room right now. That was a really interesting collection because it ended up kind of being a branch off of the kind of broader ecosystem of things that I'm developing. But a lot of times these collections, like this one included, it sort of fits within the philosophy of things. One of the kind of core ideas that I explore a lot in my work is ego death, rebirth, sort of transcending and loss of identity along the path of enlightenment, if you will. And this is an example of that idea as well, kind of played out into the collection. So Alpha versus Omega, I kind of look at it as an idea of it's like a transformational journey from mortal to ethereal and possibly back again. And I think that it's a lot of it kind of ties into the philosophy within Syncretica, which is the belief system that you reference. And without going too far down the rabbit hole of that, basically, you know, Syncretica is an idea of like a new belief system, a philosophy that tries to kind of put a framework on this human experience that we're currently, you know, within the current age and the kind of current framework of things that's not necessarily, you know, religious based, but I think that we're all missing something. And so it kind of, you know, it's an attempt to answer what is this human experience. And so there's different testaments within it, 11 different testaments that I'm writing, three of which have been written. And some of the art collections that I put out, some of them are derivatives of those ideas, and some of them are more like experiences of or practices of the lessons or writings that are within that. And so Alpha versus Omega is an example of one of those. It's more of an experience or lesson of some of those core ideas that are built within that philosophy. And in terms of how it fits within like my other broader body of work, stylistically, I think it actually fits right smack in the middle of what I did with Hands of the Faithful, which was sort of kind of became renowned for this look and feeling, this like painterly kind of quality, while also utilizing AI and hands, which at that time was nearly impossible to achieve. And with some special dark magic, I was able to do it. It kind of touches on that from an aesthetic standpoint, while also paying homage to a lot of the more like surrealistic type of thematics that I have within like my Penumbra series and other things that I put out. And it kind of meets right in the middle with that in terms of just like overall visual identity and aesthetic within the rest of my body of work.
So one of the Aston said, I'm privy to a little bit more of what's going on for you and all the ecosystem that you're generating and creating. And one of the questions I have for you is, this is amazing. I actually love the idea of an open edition because it creates a lot more accessible. But what was some of the thought process for you behind utilizing base and, I'll call it, an alternative to L1.
Well, you know, when let's roll the clocks back a little bit. You know, when Solana kind of got its next round of hype that we all experienced a few months back, I think that one of the things when I look at stuff like that, I feel like a lot of times artists in the space, and I'm definitely one of them, tends to, you know, you want to jump on whatever it is that's happening. And when the Solana push came and went, I kind of looked at it from afar. It was one of the very first things. Actually, a lot of people don't even know this, but my very first collection I ever minted was on Solana back in early 22. So to me, like Solana was a little bit dated, I guess. Although I do think there's some great things happening there. No shade whatsoever. But to me, like I looked at that as like I just feel like the pendulum swings back and forth, and we tend to jump on things very quickly. And so I was expecting the pendulum to swing back to ETH. I also was involved in a show at NFT NYC with Maeve, and that was on base. And I knew about that ahead of time before Foundation announced that they were going to be because of that. And so I knew that that was something that was going to happen. And I was like, okay, I think base is about to be very influential for a lot of different reasons. And what I find to be really interesting about it is that it's not like a new chain and a new marketplace and a new place and everyone goes and runs over to that thing. I personally like Foundation a lot, and I think that they've done a great job of building a brand that builds people up, allows people to have a certain marketplace for things. It's easy to use, which is a huge factor in Web3, in my opinion. Better access, low friction is always a good thing. But then at the same time, like it's also kind of open for a lot of different things too. And so I find that what they're doing to be very interesting, and the fact that they were going in that direction, I had a feeling that it was going to be something that energy was going to go towards it. So in my mind, I was sort of sitting back, looking at that, waiting to take a shot. That's essentially what I was thinking, just to kind of give like my own kind of insider, you know, math in my own brain, how I was thinking about it. And so I knew that was going to be the case. And I've been talking to people at Foundation for a while now, and it just sort of seemed to line up perfectly. You know, the stars aligned, and we're, you know, kind of partnered up with it. And so I'm stoked to do it. It'll be, I think, a really interesting way to do a little show on there, have an exhibition, and also kind of put it out in the forefront and kind of owning that move too. You know, I think that that's another thing where like a lot of times we tend to kind of disillusion ourselves and become too divided across the ecosystem, too decentralized in a decentralized landscape. And I think that that ends up like weakening certain things. And so to me, if I'm going to build somewhere and I'm going to continue to put collections out, I've sort of invested myself at this point into doing that on Foundation. And so this kind of opens that up and allows, I think auctions and things are great, but no one was doing auctions at all because of gas prices and everything else with ETH. It makes it really difficult to do that. And so I think that it was just a kind of a turnoff. And so with Base coming out and things being so cheap to utilize it while also being locked into ETH, I think that it's just an interesting way to utilize the platform and to kind of get back into the fun of auctioning things and doing additions and stuff like that. And so to me, it just becomes a little bit more accessible. And that's what I want at this point. Me personally, in my journey as an artist, I want more people to absorb the work and to feel it and to be a part of it and find themselves in it. And it's less about the money or the sales, and it's more about accessibility to me. And that's sort of where my focus is. And I think that it syncs up with that perfectly and aligns with it. So that's, you know, those are my thoughts.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense for how you structured it with the 7 one-of-ones and the 2 open editions. You can balance that accessibility while also creating something more limited and special for collectors who really want to go for that type of experience. And, you know, it's really great thoughts you have there on Base. Clearly you've thought about it a lot, and I tend to agree with pretty much everything you're saying on there. So I'm super excited to see that. And, you know, one question that I had for you regarding the art itself is, what do you hope collectors feel when they see the art? Or perhaps if a feeling is not your intention, maybe what do you hope to convey? You know, what were you really trying to express with this series?
You know, ever since I started making art personally way back in like high school, one of my biggest intentions with work was to just break people's habits and to create new thought. And when I went into advertising and marketing, and I was in ad agencies and all this stuff, that I kept that true. Even when I was working on ads and things like this, it's always been a matter of like trying to stop someone as they're walking for them to look at something, absorb something, and actually have it influence that line of thought in one way, whether it breaks thought or it makes them think of something different than what I intended or whatever. Like none of that to me, like the outcome of that is not important. It's just the trigger of it. It's something that when people look at something, they go, shit, like that has weight to it. That makes me feel a certain thing. If it just does that, I don't really care what the feeling is, as long as there is one. I think that a lot of times in this space, things move very, very quickly. And we all have a very short attention span because of social media and everything else. And you can't read a 10-word tweet because it's a waste of your time. And I think the problem is with that is that we don't end up diving into ideas enough. We don't end up talking about things enough. And that's the hard part. That's the challenge that I take on with my work. And I acknowledge it. I don't expect people to sit down and read a bunch of stuff and to understand it the way that I do, or to have had experiences like I've had with testing the boundaries of my consciousness and, you know, trying things like astral projection or psychedelics or whatever else to kind of like test what reality really is. To me, I'm creating art to solve that for other people. If they don't understand that, if they haven't tapped into those ideas, I want them to see something and it actually make a crack in their psyche. I want it to be something that stops them and for them to go, holy shit, this actually has something behind it. And 1% of those people will actually want to dive in. And when they do, they will see the massive amount of things behind it. But I never want that ecosystem of things, even though I've built it as a framework for the way that I create and the purpose behind it and the intention behind what I do, I don't ever want that to be the gateway or the filter into the work. I want the work to be the gateway into that ecosystem of things. And so the work itself has to be simple and it has to be meaningful, but without it being a barrier to entry. And I think that there's a very delicate balance between trying to play into our ecosystem of things here when it comes to attention spans and things being glitchy and fast and crazy, and it's just this one thing, or it's really simple, or it's kind of feels stupid, or to me, I understand the kind of attention challenge is what I would refer to it as. And to me, like my work, I understand that it's heavier. And you said earlier, Aston, you were like, well, it's really complex and I won't do it justice. And blah, and that is the challenge that I've placed on myself. Like that's my problem. That's my challenge. I understand and accept that heavier narratives are hard to consume. And so I want to put work out that is simple to absorb and allows a path for people to understand that there's more, and not just to my art or to the Web3 art ecosystem, but there's more to this reality. There's more to understanding what it means to experience this life as human outside of the traditional constructs that we've all been programmed with throughout our life. And if I have any effect on anyone, and it's just them realizing that maybe there is something else, then I find that to be success. So maybe that's a really long answer, but that's how I feel about it.
No, that's awesome. And look, I think that it makes perfect sense given your experience and background in your professional life, right? And trying to hook people's attention, but sort of lead them along the path and meet them where they are attention-wise, especially in this space. So I love that. And I cannot wait to see the full set of works and just continue to see more of your work. I mean, I've only more recently, within the past 6 months, started to explore and just have a really fantastic style that certainly makes me feel, and I think a lot of other people too. So with that, I wanted to...
Real quick, Aston, like before you open it up, one of the things I wanted to talk about with Black's work is, you know, you kind of touched on it, but like you have an extensive amount of like design and like your history, like professionally, and your ability to like integrate that into the work that you produce is incredible to me. Can you speak to that real quick? Just give a brief history of you. I think it's important because when you're looking at this world construction, like, yes, this is an amazing set. Yes, you had the foresight to go to base. But I think one of the things that, like, I just, you know, I could talk to you for hours about is your foresight into, like, building this whole ecosystem. If you want to just touch on that briefly, I know that it could be, like, a whole freaking three-hour conversation. But I think it's important for people, especially when you're looking at this, it's not just one drop. You're really buying into something that is much bigger. And I think that that's actually, it's more meaningful, not just the emotional connection that you're making.
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as my professional background, like I've been an artist, you know, ever since like middle school or something, you know, but I went to Savannah College of Art and Design. I went into, you know, I've been fine art trained, so to speak. I have a bachelor in fine arts. I went into advertising and design. I was a grunt graphic designer for a while in the agency world. I'm also an entrepreneur. I've started several businesses. I worked in a couple different agencies and in-house creative teams, worked all the way up to creative director, marketing director, et cetera, et cetera. I ran a couple agencies as well. I have a lot of strategy consulting and partnership roles under my belt as well. And so, you know, I have professional world experience, and a lot of it is in the direction of, I guess maybe like it touches on the creative side one way or the other, you know, branding, advertising, things like this. There is an element to that, even though a lot of it's horrible out in, you know, marketing world of things. But I've always sort of had this feeling in me to question things and have art question things. That's the even things I was making back in like high school or something did that. It was far different from what anyone else was doing. And I think that that welcomes a lot of criticism. But it made people stop and think about something differently. And that's always been my goal with everything I've ever created, whether it be for professional reasons or artistic reasons. With a lot of the work that I have right now, I think that in our world of things here in Web3, things move really quickly. And with the advent of AI and a lot of us using these tools, there's this shift that can occur really quickly. You know, on one side, you have the ability to create anything that you can possibly think of in any style, with any reason, anything ever. And that becomes very inundating. That's like a really heavy thing to do. And it also diminishes from what anyone knows you as. And I think that's a really tough thing to do. Because on the other side of that, you have the more traditional art side where there's a really, really slow evolution, if at all, of artistic style or aesthetic or purpose. And a lot of it ends up looking the exact same over many, many, many years. And you see that happen here as well, especially people not using things like AI. And I think that's also a trap. I think that's also a hard thing to do all the time because it gets boring. And a lot of us, you can ask anyone in the room right now that works with AI, they can tell you they made 10,000 images in the last week on one thing. And you can see through ideas much faster. Things are much more rapidly developed because of that. I think that's a good thing because you can see through ideas much faster. And because of that, I think you can end up building something much better in a shorter period of time if you put your intention behind that. And so the reason why I've created a framework around the art that I'm creating is because I want to be known for how something looks, I don't want to be locked into looking a certain way. I would rather be known for what something means. I'd rather be known for the concept behind it. I would rather be known for the ideas that people have from looking at my work, not necessarily the way that the work looks. That's what I want to achieve. That's a much taller mountain to climb, quite frankly. And I'm a bit of a masochist in that way because I accept that challenge and the scars and blood and tears that come from it, for better or for worse. And I don't know if I'm successful at it, but that's the challenge that I'm trying to do. And so I think with Syncretica and the framework of things that I've built and things I'm writing and the works I'm doing, all this crazy stuff that could be talked about for hours and hours, a lot of it's just on my own and in my own mind and things that I'm writing. And I share certain things with certain people for different reasons and have a little, you know, small little Syncretica group. We kind of, you know, go back and forth with feedback with a lot of the testaments and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's not completely in a silo, but at the same time, like it's all built around the idea of from the art side, from the production side, it's a matter of making sure everything is in the same framework, but also allowing me to do things that maybe look different from one another. And I think that's a good thing because it helps you establish different ideas in different ways while keeping things under the same umbrella. And it basically keeps me from working way, way, way outside of anything that I would do. And I don't think that's a good thing either. I think you have to like have a purpose behind your work. And so to me, it's just a matter of like defining that purpose. And it's the same one I've had my whole life, really. And one way or the other, it boils down to the same thing. And that is to create new ideas and to influence a new thought one way or the other.
Love that. Thank you so much for sharing. Sorry to interrupt you, Aston. Go for it, my man.
No, it's all good. That was amazing. Thank you, Black. I think that also puts into context, like a broader context, what you're trying to do with your work. And I think to have this longer term mission is beautiful, right? And I think that, you know, for things, a lot of things that are really, really valuable, it takes a long time to get there. And a lot of masochism, as you put it, I think that is certainly the case. And that's what makes it a labor of love. So we have time for one question in the audience, and then I got to wrap. I can go a tiny bit over, but mostly need to end at the hour. So if there's anyone out there, let's leave it for Black and not for Markets. You can always DM me or Jared about that. But does anybody have a question for Black about Alpha versus Omega or anything else?
And while we kind of wait, if someone was to come up, I was just going to share as well, you were talking earlier about like, you know, bass and additions and all this kind of stuff. And something that I did within this collection, I don't think we actually went through the actual idea of it, but it's Alpha versus Omega. And it's sort of a transformational journey of one to the other. And every piece that's in the collection is actually titled as which has the most dominance presence in the piece itself. So the very first work is all Alpha. And so it's titled 8:0. And the very last one is a full Omega, which is 0:8. And those are the two additions. And everything else in between, the 7 in between, are a transitional period between one to the other consecutively. And those are the 1-to-1. So I try to work within the mechanics of utilizing the additions and not just having something that was arbitrary, like, oh, this one is an addition, or, oh, this one is, you know, the highest price because I find it to be the most valuable. I made it so that the additions, as they're the lower price and more accessible ones, they are actually the purest ones of the group itself. They're either the Alpha or the Omega and not a combination of the two. So I just want to kind of add that in and sprinkle that on as we were kind of talking about that a while ago.
Oh man, that's awesome. Well, I really like that little nugget that you designed in there, and it makes me want to see them even more now and kind of see the balance that comes in the additions and how it might be on one side or the other on the various one of ones. So thank you for sharing that. I'll just pause here.
Which one wins out, right? Which one wins the addition fight, Alpha or Omega? Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. That'll be really cool to see. Cool. Well, I don't know if we're going to get any questions here, so we will go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us, Black. And again, if you all want to follow Black, he is at Black_AI shown here on screen. And mark your calendars for April 17th, Alpha versus Omega on base with Black on Foundation on the base L2 blockchain. Really excited for it. Best of luck. And I can't wait to see the art. Definitely be putting it out here on the daily content that we do here. And with that, I just want to say thank you to everybody who came in the audience, listened to Black. Thank you to Jared, as always, my co-host. Thank you, Black, again, for coming up. And thanks to everybody who watches us on YouTube later or listens to it later. We appreciate you all. Happy Friday. Hope you have a fantastic weekend, and we will see you next week. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for tuning into Collector's Corner. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you like this episode and want to help us out, please subscribe and leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and follow us on YouTube. Please also follow us on Twitter for announcements as we expand to other social and content platforms. Our Twitter handle is @collectors_XYZ. We'd also love to hear any feedback you have, so please comment or reach out. We're always striving to be more useful and get better so we can help you in your collecting journey. The Collector's Corner team and their guests are not registered investment advisors. All views expressed on this podcast are personal opinions and are not specific inducements to make particular investments or investment strategies and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. This show is solely for informational and entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, please consult a professional.